Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. We also want to let you know today we're sponsored by Simply Safe Home Security. Visit simplysafe.com/ricochet. More from Simply Safe a little bit later in the podcast. Jim, let's go first to our good martini. There's a lot of Democrats up for re-election in the U.S. Senate in 2018, several of them in states that Donald Trump won, a few of them in states that Donald Trump won by a lot. That would include Joe Manchin in West Virginia, Claire McCaskill in Missouri, Joe Donnelly in Indiana, John Tester in Montana, Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota, and the list goes on and on. I think about 25 seats out of 34 that the Democrats have to defend. And now it looks like they've got problems within their own party. Some Democrats not happy with the fact that some of those red state Democrats and others are playing nice with Republicans. So they might get primaried. There's a new campaign from the far left called We Will Replace You. I don't know if they've got a parody of the Queen song that goes along with that. But here's some of the language that they've got here. Elected officials tend to take the path of least resistance on most things unless you create a political cost for them. That's where we come in. The growing anti-Trump movement springing up at town hall meetings and protests across the country has already pushed Democratic strategy in the right direction, but not nearly far enough. Three Democratic senators voted yes to confirm Rex Tillerson, a big oil baron with close ties to Putin, who conspired to destroy our climate by suppressing evidence about global warming. 14 Senate Democrats joined with Republicans to confirm Mike Pompeo to be our new CIA director, despite Pompeo's past Islamophobic remarks and ties to far-right conspiracy theorists, his position in favor of unconstitutional surveillance on Americans, and his enthusiastic support for torture and secret detention. And they're also upset with Durbin, McCaskill, and Tester for all saying that Neil Gorsuch deserves a fair shake. After Republicans refused to even meet with President Obama's nominee Merrick Garland for almost a year and effectively stole a Supreme Court nomination. So, what do they want? What do they want Democrats to do? Here's their list. At a minimum, voting no on all Trump appointees and fighting all of Trump's legislative priorities. Fighting the unconstitutional Republican theft of a Supreme Court nomination. Using congressional processes and rules of order to systematically bring all business to a crawl to block Trump's agenda and demand Steve Bannon be fired, and publicly supporting impeachment if Trump is found to have broken the law or violated the Constitution. So, Jim, some see this as the Democratic version of the Tea Party, only on the far opposite end of the spectrum. Others say this is a party in complete chaos right now that is effectively eating their own because they don't know what else to do.
You know, Greg, I believe the first check to this organization should come from the National Republican Senatorial Committee. Saying, we stand behind you 100%, and if you need money, we will fund as many hard left primary opponents to these Democrats as you can. We are going to do everything we can to help you. And remember, as long as you're fighting the incumbent, as long as you're hurting, because, you know, just like you, hard lefties, we at the National Republican Senatorial Committee have this slogan, we will replace you as well. We just mean in the general election. Yeah, so a couple thoughts come out of that. One is, I remember it was not long after the announcement that Steve Bannon was going to be the chief counsel or whatever title he has in the White House. And I was seeing some of my friends in the Philadelphia or Pennsylvania area who are left of center. You know, and they voted for Hillary. They did not like any Republicans. And they just were like furious with Pat Toomey, the Republican senator from Pennsylvania who'd just been reelected. Saying that, if you don't, you know, you have to demand, do everything you can to stop Steve Bannon from coming to the White House. And I remember thinking, Greg, what do they want him to do? Jump the fence and try to forcibly, you know, throw, like, this is not a position that's up for Senate confirmation. So they're, you know, like, I mean, Pat Toomey could say, yeah, I think it's a terrible choice, but it's not going to do, you know, what, do you think it's going to change Trump's mind? Right? You know, the best shot of getting Steve Bannon out of the White House is some sort of, you know, de facto palace coup or something going on. We would say you think Priebus would be behind it. Actually, the thing that is single most likely to get Bannon out of there is disapproval from Ivanka. You know, that's what's going to get rid of him. So all this pressure you want to put on the Senate, oh, you've got to demand that Bannon goes. they're not, nothing they do can change that. So stop making these impossible demands upon them. And oh, by the way, Pat Toomey, as I noted, just got reelected. He's not up for the voters until 2022. Greg, you don't know if we're going to be here in 2022. Pat Toomey might not run for, you know, like the idea, oh, we're going to remember this 5.5 years from now. We're really going to come after you. Like, it's not going to do anything. I don't understand this this philosophy. Then the idea, we're going to oppose all Trump nominations. Really? This is kind of where a lot of Democrats are kind of turning out to be this way. If this is the way it's going to be, that out of sheer ideological disagreement, that is sufficient reason to vote against a cabinet official, that's fine. But this just means that the 2009 level Republican support for Obama's cabinet will never happen again. You will never see the opposition party supporting the nominees of the other party. And that's the way the Democrats want to play this. That's fine. You'd think they would learn from Harry Reid and the filibuster on nominees that these kinds of changes tend to come back to bite them. But if this is the way they want to play the game, we can play that. But beyond that, if you're the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee and you're thinking, we just need pick up three seats in the midterms, the map already looks tough for you. The last thing you need is some sort of apoplectic response on the left and pressuring the likes of Joe Manchin and John Tester and folks like that to go further to the left. You know, those red state Democrats are caught between a rock and a hard place. And Greg, do you have the world's smallest violin over there?
Well, if Joe Manchin does get primaried and actually gets defeated, and you want to know who the next senator from West Virginia is going to be, Jim Garrity wrote a very nice profile of him earlier this week. Mr. Morrissey, I believe his name is.
Patrick Morrissey. He spells his last name with one S instead of two, making it, I believe, the single most misspelled name in all of American politics. Considering our names, Greg, that's really a big accomplishment.
That's pretty impressive, yeah.
But yes, and I did ask some folks in West Virginia Republican politics, do you really think there could be a further left challenger to Joe Manchin? My first thought, because I believe it was Sally Cohn. People, our listeners probably know from CNN and various inane statements on Twitter, who said that she was ready to pack up her bags and pack up her car and drive down to West Virginia and spend the next 23 months trying to help a Democratic primary challenger replace Joe Manchin. And I believe it was Charlie Cook who offered to help her pack and said, please do. Go right ahead. Be our guest. That'll work out great for you, because you can only I was trying to think, was there actually any far left Sally Cohn, Elizabeth Warren, MSNBC style Democrat in West Virginia? And the short answer is yes. Around Morgantown, university towns, you might be able to find one or two that are probably a down the line liberal Democrat. But again, that's not the sort of candidate that wins statewide. But if far left Democrats want to go down this path, I'm not going to stop them.
Yeah, I don't even think West Virginia Democrats are going to have much of an appetite for that. They're pretty old school when it comes to that stuff. So I'm not sure they'd be all that excited to see Sally Cohn or her ilk there trying to defeat Joe Manchin. But good luck to them. All right, on to the bad martini now. And you're talking about confirmations and how the Democrats are now reaping what they've sown in recent years. But our bad martini today is once again calling out Republicans for deciding to oppose really solid nominees for things. I mean, if you don't like Trump, that's fine. But most of these people have gotten the support of virtually all the Republican senators. We called out Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski a while ago for opposing Betsy DeVos and requiring Mike Pence to come in and have to break the tie on that vote in the Senate. Earlier today, Mick Mulvaney, until today, a congressman from South Carolina and a definite budget hawk, he was confirmed 51-49. Entirely along party line votes, except John McCain, who was supposedly this great warrior against pork in the United States Senate. He has decided to vote against Mick Mulvaney, essentially because Mick Mulvaney actually thinks there might be some waste in defense spending. And John McCain will not have any of that. He refuses to go after defense spending in any way. Not to let Susan Collins off the hook, while she did vote to confirm Mulvaney, she has now said she will not be voting to confirm Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt to be the next administrator of the EPA. McCain, trying to make things more interesting himself, says he supports Pruitt, but he's got a previous engagement in Europe, when actually won't be there for the vote. So it looks like Scott Pruitt's still going to make it. But once again, you've got Republicans making odd choices when it comes to really solid nominees here, Jim.
Senator McCain, there's no later flight? I mean, you know, we got a 2-seat majority here. We really don't have that much room for wiggle room here. So, and it is, you know, mid-February. You'd kind of like to get the cabinet in place for things like this. I was meeting with a bunch of other right-of-center bloggers and writers last night. And there was a lot of grumbling going around the table. And actually, I'm gonna disagree slightly with the premise of our bad martini today, Greg. You think about it. Every single Republican Trump nominee who's gotten a vote has gotten confirmed.
Yes.
The Pudzer, the labor secretary, is going to withdraw. It almost seems like some sort of gypsy curse. There's inevitably one member of the cabinet who doesn't make it. Something comes up in the confirmation hearing process. Pruitt, I mean, Pudzer never actually made it to the confirmation hearing. So we, you know, inevitably you have one pick where they've got something in their background and it just really impedes the likelihood of getting the threshold of votes. But in this case, you know, there was some grumbling that we required Mike Pence to break the tie on Betsy DeVos. Lisa Murkowski, you know, flipped, and Susan Collins flipped. Murkowski's really not forgivable because she's, like, once again, reelected last year. So she's got 6 years. It's not like she's got to sweat, you know, this vote coming back to haunt her back in 2022. But all in all, we can count the number of Republicans who have bailed on a Trump nominee on one hand, or maybe two now. There's McCain. There's Collins. There's Murkowski on one each. Collins will flip on Pruitt. You know, in the end, as long as you get those 51 votes, think about it. If this is going to save Susan Collins a lot of grief come election time and make her more likely to stick around and not have a Democrat replace her in Maine, I'm okay with that. Obviously, Democrats got really excited when they got Murkowski and Collins for the DeVos vote, and then they suddenly realized it's really easy to get those first two votes. It's that third one that kills the nomination that's a lot harder. So in some ways, you know, I kind of grind my teeth when I see John McCain saying, no, there's no waste in the defense budget. Anything we buy, we can throw at the enemy, and thus it can't be wasteful. philosophy. Mulvaney's clearly qualified, clearly probably one of the most reassuring picks for those of us who want to see a smaller federal budget, who want to see less government spending. And that was actually something McCain talked about back when he was running for president back in 2008, eliminating waste and things like that. So it's a little frustrating by McCain, but all in all, the fact that almost everybody Trump's nominating is going to get through. So in a way, I'm almost perfectly fine with Republican opposition to the Trump nominees, as long as it's window dressing opposition.
As long as the picks get through. And don't worry, Arizona. John McCain will be very conservative again come early 2022. And don't be surprised if he does run again. His mother's 105 and really, really healthy. So John McCain probably not going anywhere. Don't be shocked if he runs again when he's 86 years old. Anyway, Trump's picks that have gotten votes on the Senate floor have been quite secure. But what about your home? As we said yesterday, there's a pretty alarming story out of California not that long ago where a woman who was hired to clean homes was stealing from them at the same time. Imagine that. You pay someone to help take care of your home. You don't think you need to worry about putting your valuables under lock and key. Nonetheless, they steal your stuff. So how do you protect yourself from something like this? A regular security system won't protect you from people you know and trust.
So here's what you do. You get SimpliSafe. SimpliSafe makes it possible to know what's going on in your home at any time. If you want to check in, you just live stream the footage from the SimpliSafe camera directly to your smartphone. Anytime you want, you can get text message and email alerts when someone arms or disarms your system, so you can always be sure and confident that your home is safe.
For 24/7 protection that you can really trust, go to simplisafe.com/ricochet. That's SimpliSafe.com/ricochet. Order a SimpliSafe home security system today, and you'll even get our special 10% discount. So go now, simplisafe.com/ricochet. And Jim, let's move on to our crazy martini now, in case anyone hasn't been paying attention to anything really in the last couple of days. The media thinks they've got a real, real massive political scandal on their hands here with Michael Flynn and his contacts potentially with Russia and whatever was discussed with the ambassador. We have no idea, but they're really, really sure it's a really, really big scandal. Dan Rather thinks it could be bigger than Watergate. And Tom Friedman said November 8th, 2016 is the equivalent of Pearl Harbor Day and 9/11. And in terms of damaging the United States, and Chuck Todd says this is the biggest foreign scandal since Iran-Contra, and everybody needs to buckle down for a massive political hurricane. So with very even-keeled assessments like that, the mainstream media shocked yesterday, shocked, when Donald Trump took two questions at his press conference with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu And he called not on the mainstream networks or the AP. He called on the Christian Broadcasting Network's David Brody and Katie Pavlich of Town Hall, both of whom had the temerity, Jim, to ask questions related to Middle East policy, since that was what the topic was at the press conference. And Brody even slipped in the Flynn issue in his question to Trump, which got Trump to suggest that the media has treated Mr. Flynn very, very badly. So the mainstream media not happy about this at all. They sent out a bunch of tweets as it happening, disgusted that CBN and Town Hall got the questions and how unfair this was. And then the coup de grace here is Jim Acosta, after the press conference, whining about it to Wolf Blitzer.
The two questions that were asked or called upon from the president in this news conference went to the Christian Broadcasting Network. Is obviously owned by Pat Robertson, the televangelist down in Virginia. It's a very conservative broadcasting network. And townhall.com, which is a very conservative news website. And so in the last three news conferences, Wolf, all of the questions to the American news media have been handled by conservative press. And I think, Wolf, there's no other way to describe it, but the fix is in. This White House, this president, does not want to answer questions, critical questions, about his associates, his aides' contacts with the Russians during the course of that campaign, just as his national security advisor is being run out of this White House on a rail.
Now, you might be laughing about that, but seriously, put down your beverage before I read this, because this is from Chris Saliza over at the Washington Post. He says, simply because all six of the media outlets that Trump has called on as of late have varying degrees of conservative bent doesn't mean their reporters aren't serious and good journalists. But there is a difference in taking questions from outlets with a partisan lean and taking them from mainstream media outlets who are absolutely committed to playing it straight. Jim, how do you like this temper tantrum?
I was going to say, wasn't it, I think it was a New York Times reporter in one of the first press conferences for President Obama asking, Mr. President, in your first months in office, what have you found most enchanting about the job? I'm going to have to go back and look at the exact wording. But the gist is, there were a lot of times where we on the right saw questions from the mainstream, and you can't see me making air quotes as I say that, making the contention that really seemed like softballs. I believe it was after Todd Akin had made his statement. The first question to Obama in some press conference was, basically, Mr. President, doesn't this demonstrate that Republicans are hostile to women? So the other thing, I've heard a lot of, like, how dare he call on Katie Pavlich. She's pointing out Katie Pavlich. I don't know if I call her a friend. We're friendly acquaintances. Be like, I think highly of her. I don't know as much about David Brody other than, being familiar with his work. But the gist being, to grade them on the questions, right? If they really were, Mr. President, why are you so awesome? Then, yeah, they deserve what they're getting. They deserve criticism. But as far as I know, those were two pretty solid questions. What it really was the media was in, full, I would say category 5 apoplectic meltdown. But when every day is a category 5 apoplectic meltdown, category 5 doesn't mean anything anymore. The entire measuring stick now has to be adjusted. So, yet another, biggest meltdown ever about the Flynn resignation, reports of conversations between Flynn and Manafort and other Trump officials with Russians and things like that. Look, when you have a joint press conference with the Israeli leader, you're going to get some Middle East questions. I don't think they're completely out of line for asking that kind of question in that kind of circumstance. So it's been really fascinating to watch how many major media institutions really see themselves as having almost a constitutional right to ask a question, almost a flat out sense of privilege about it. And, what's very increasingly, we kind of have suspected this for a while. I think I don't know what you want to say. It was David Gregory flipping out at Scott McClellan during the Bush years, or the back and forth with Ari Fleischer a little bit earlier in the Bush administration. But clearly, the daily press conference was turning into a TV show, and it is a way for the White House correspondent of various networks to be a star. And now, when you don't get to ask the questions, all of a sudden you're not a star anymore. All of a sudden you're not nearly as important as you thought you were. And this is hitting them really where it hurts. And that's where it's kind of fascinating, because I can see how this would be an extremely high priority to these White House correspondents. I do not see how it's an extraordinarily high priority for the rest of the American public.
Oh, no. The only thing wounded here is ego. It's not the free press. It's not the constitutionality of anything. So, Jim, another fun day in D.C. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And remember, for 24/7 protection you can really trust, go to simplysafe.com/ricochet, simplisafe.com/ricochet, for SimpliSafe home security. Join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.